there, it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Hello, it's Tracy here, and welcome to Tracy Tully Talks, another mind-blowing chat for us today. And in the studio, I have the dynamic Gertrude Bertacci, who's joined us all the way from Wellington in New Zealand. How are you, Gertrude?
I'm awesome, Tracy. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We're very excited. I just tell our listeners a little bit about you. So Gertrude is a global curator and a philanthropy consultant. She's a TEDx speaker, author, and founder of Her Story Circle. Gertrude is a mother of three, and she immigrated to New Zealand in 2001. So Gertrude, tell me exactly what is it that you do?
Wow. Right now, Tracy, it feels like I am playing a game, doing what I love most, which is speaking, but galvanizing an army of female voices on a platform called the Her Story Circle. We meet to connect, collaborate, inspire, uplift, and empower each other through the sharing of our stories. We have a wide range of topics from business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, family and relationships, social justice, spirituality in the creativity section. You can dance, you can sing, you can paint a picture.
Wow, this summit sounds pretty amazing. When is this going to happen, Gertrude?
Our first online summit is happening on the 28th of November to the 13th of December. And we're having it in multiple locations and multiple time zones, starting here, of course, in New Zealand, as we're the first country to see the sun. We then go on to Australia for 5 days, then the United States, then the UK and Europe.
Well, there's a lot more we're going to hear about this, I know. And I've got a webinar next week on Wednesday. So I'm going to be sharing to everyone there all about this fabulous summit. And I remember hearing about it at the beginning of the year, just before COVID hit. And so you were actually physically going to do these events here in Australia.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a very new initiative. We're a social impact project where we are a group of women who are not only connecting for personal reasons, but to have in every location where we host an event. So we launched in Las Vegas in July last year. That was the first conference. We had a conference here in Wellington, New Zealand, one in Sydney. Beginning of the year, I set off to Oslo, Norway. I went to London. I went to New York. I managed to do one in Brisbane, Auckland, and Hamilton before everything had to stop. So we've had to pivot, and now we're having our first online event.
And isn't that a fabulous challenge that's been for you to do that flip and make it happen within the year of 2020? I can't wait to be a part of that. Now tell me, Gertrude, we have spoken a few times before, and I know that there's a lot more about you than this summit. So tell me a little bit about your products.
Oh, where do I begin? So I believe in the power of storytelling. Whether you're in business, whether you're running a nonprofit, marketing is all about storytelling. And I want to empower women to honor their personal stories and to share. So we help them curate the stories, not just in video, but in audio through our podcast. We have an anthology series where we highlight every woman's story in a chapter in a book where they publish with 10 other women. We also have the Her Story magazine. So a number of things are coming out of this. Having a publishing company here in New Zealand, I know how powerful it is for you to be a published author, especially if you're a speaker. It's all about capturing your intellectual IP and learning how to repurpose it and turning a personal story into a movie script or turning your business ideas into a board game. So I take people's works to the Frankfurt Book Fair every year, and I show women how to repurpose their content, how to sell their foreign rights, and to think a little bit bigger than just being an author or a speaker.
Oh, that's interesting. Frankfurt, as in Germany.
Yes.
And you're going to do that every year. Well, when is it in the year?
It's normally in October every year. So again, this year things have changed. A lot is being done online. But if you love books, you've got to go to the Frankfurt Book Fair at least once in your life.
Oh,
It is an
that
amazing
sounds
space.
fascinating.
Yeah.
Excellent. So for our listeners there, Gertrude is not only a TEDx speaker and international consultant in philanthropy, as well as you're a global consultant. You are an author and a publisher. You also have a magazine. Now, I know there's another product, set of products there that you have that you might be wearing today. Yeah.
Yes. So I am a designer. I'm a textile artist. I actually paid my way through university making African clothes when I studied in South Africa. So I'm from Zimbabwe originally, moved to South Africa to get my first degree. Didn't have a scholarship, but went to South Africa just before independence. And you could not buy African clothes in shops because of apartheid. So I just saw a nice little niche. And I would go to campus with a backpack full of books, a backpack full of fabric. I would try and look for clients from my lecturers and the professors at the university. Before I knew it, I was dressing parliamentarians in Cape Town. And I recreated the brand. It's called Simzisani. It is a name that came out of my three children's names. So my oldest son's name is Simbarashe, which is the Sim. My daughter's name is Ziyanda, which is the Z, and my youngest son's name is Dumisani. So Simzisani is the brand name. And when I relaunched in 2017, I had gone through a separation, a divorce. I was depressed. I'd put on a lot of weight, and I had literally lost myself. And I love clothing, I love fabric. And I went free falling through the universe, trying to find myself, went to 12 countries in 2 years. And I was in a craft market in Macedonia. And they had this exquisite fabric. And I thought, I want to be a model. I had just turned 49. And I bought 10 pieces of material, a needle and thread, went into my hotel room, cut the fabric, stitched it up with just this needle and thread, hired a professional photographer, and went on a photo shoot in Macedonia. I put those pictures on Facebook, and those 10 outfits sold within 48 hours at $250 a piece. They were so exquisitely put together. Although I didn't have a sewing machine, I hadn't even sewn them up yet. But I knew I had hit on a good idea. And it's a clothing range that is designed to uplift a woman who's going through a transition. It's called My Black is Beautiful. I wanted to feel good. Sometimes people say to you, you have to feel good on the inside. But for me, I had to work on the outside to feel good on the inside. And because I had put on so much weight, it's non-restrictive clothing. And it's a clothing brand that has a buy one, give one aspect to it, where if you buy a dress for yourself, we gift a dress to another woman in need. You can nominate her if you know a friend or a colleague who's not feeling well or is going through stuff and just needs uplifting, or it can go to a random stranger. And because it's non-restrictive clothing, it's ideal for women who've had cervical cancer, breast cancer. If you've lost your hair, they come with scarves. We can make hats. And I'm having absolute fun working on that clothing range and launching it next year.
I can imagine you would be. So you've got your finger in the pie and a lot of pies there. When you talk about the word brand and your children, I remember years ago, our listeners wouldn't know, but I come from right out west in the middle, not far too far from the middle of the of Australia there, and we had a brand for our cattle. And we actually used our children in that brand for our cattle. So I'm hearing that's a lovely touch, isn't it, that you can keep there with it. But your brand is a very powerful one, and it's encompassing. And so males and females can hear what you've done with what you've got, which is you, and how you have strategically placed yourself out there in the universe to leverage all your strengths. Now, you're a poet as well, as an author.
Yes, I think in terms of personal branding, you are unique. There is only one you. And I live in New Zealand and Australasia. There's very few black women here. So I use my point of difference.
Yes.
I show up as being African first. I can't get rid of my chocolate brown skin. So I embrace everything that is me, and I'm very proud of being African. I didn't want to be mistaken as being African American or Caribbean. I wanted people to have a look at my branding, have a look at me as a person, and know exactly where I come from. So I show up as being African first.
And that's a powerful message for us all to learn, that we need to dig down into who we are, actually who we are, almost like a character in a book, where when you write, I'm writing a children's book at the moment, so, and a non-fiction previously, but when you write, you set up your character, and it's something that we probably forget to do, us first, don't we, when we're looking at business and marketing and our capabilities and what we can leverage.
And especially for speakers and for authors, people tend to forget that the minute you step into this realm, you are no longer you. You're competing in a world full of speakers, in a world full of authors. How are you going to show up as being different? So I do work a lot with all of my clients to help them with their personal branding and get
Yes.
really clear who their target market is, who their avatar is, and how best to communicate with them.
So, as the founder of Her Story Circle, can you tell our listeners about that?
So this initiative came in a vision. So my most creative business ideas come when life knocks me down. Whenever I hit rock bottom, I just tell myself, hold on to your seatbelt. The only way from here is up. I was recovering from heart failure. So when I went through my separation and my divorce, I ended up collapsing with heart failure in Bali. And in my recovery process, I met my husband, who I'm now married to now, and he bought me an electric bike so I could lose weight. And I was riding all the way to the city and back one day, and I was knocked off that bike by a male biker coming in the opposite direction. And I fell onto oncoming traffic and almost died again.
Ooh.
I was missed by a big truck in rush hour as I crashed onto the motorway. And as I was recovering from that accident, I came out with a small scratch on my finger, my elbow, and my knee, but badly bruised on the whole left-hand side of my body. And it felt like an energetic hit. I knew something had stopped me. And I went back into my meditation every morning. And I would ask myself, what is my next step? What is my next step? And the idea came like an A4 piece of paper with silos of women sitting in circles of 10 and lines that went out that connected them to the next 10 and the next 10. It was like a spider's web. And I thought, I need to connect women in some way, in a very different way. And I had always had a vision because I attend a lot of conferences. I've spoken in 56 countries in the 20 years since I moved to New Zealand. And I always get frustrated when we go to an event and there's a group of dynamic women who get together. We speak, we share, we inspire, but there's no tangible outcome to why we gathered in that meeting place. So her story is different in the sense that we are a social impact movement with a vision to connect 1 million women in 1 year. And in every location where we have an event, we find a grassroots project that is focused around women and children, the elderly, the homeless, or the disabled. So we raise money through the publishing company to uplift a woman in the community who's making a difference. So it could be somebody who's got a soup kitchen for the homeless, and we donate $10,000, and we know we fed 10,000 people. We want to really quantify the impact. The conference is also a bridge between women in the developed world and women in the developing world, so we can pull our sisters up. Mm-hmm. So since I got to New Zealand, that has been my biggest passion, to reach back to Africa and find ways to uplift and inspire women and empower them so they can look after themselves, they can feed their children. So I set up women's cooperatives with very little money. Like, I could buy 10 sewing machines and 10 overlockers and start a sewing project and get 100 women out of poverty that way.
Yeah.
So that's what her story is really about. For me, it's my reason for being. I love to speak. I love to uplift and inspire women through my stories and my experiences. And now I'm bringing other women who've gone through trials, to tribulations, who've created successful businesses. What can we do to share and collaborate? I think collaboration is the main thing. And the ethos of the organization is the Ubuntu philosophy. And I hope you don't mind if I share a little bit about Ubuntu.
Please share.
So Ubuntu is an African philosophy, which literally translated means a person is only a person through other people. When you Google the word Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, you will find Linux software. So a lot of people don't realize that the software was based on this philosophy. It's freeware. It's about connection. And the pillars of Ubuntu are empathy, connection, collaboration. And I believe those are the superpowers that every single human being possesses. In Africa, we believe that if one of us is not okay, we're all not okay. And it's not about me, it's not about you, it's about we. And I think as a message, as a mission, when I incarnated in my chocolate brown skin in this lifetime, I came to spread that philosophy, to help people learn how to connect authentically, whether it's at home with your husband and your kids, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in the street, where you're standing at a bus stop and you say hello to a random stranger and smile and make somebody's day. It's as simple as that.
I love it. I love it. And I love what you're saying about the three pillars, your three pillars. So it's collaboration, connection, as well as empathy, and that you're giving back to others. And that's a powerful statement. If we all set up our businesses with the vision, but in mind that we can always help others, and what could or would that be? That's really great.
I think we can all be philanthropists. We don't have to be millionaires to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that you have to have a chunk of change to make a difference in the world. Hmm. You don't. It's what you do on a day-by-day basis. Do you know who your next door neighbor is? Do you say hello to them? Do you smile? Do you connect? There's a lot of sadness, especially in the developed world.
Yes.
You know, I come from a community where community is everything. Mm-hmm. You don't die alone. You don't suffer alone. You don't grieve alone. You're surrounded by family. You're surrounded by community. And I think that's part of what I want to infuse in the world, because the world's problems are very simple. When we each play a part in being the solution to the problem, so that if the 7 billion people on the planet hear that there's an earthquake in Haiti, if we each give a dollar to Haiti, we can restore that country in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
But we're living in a sense of not enoughness in the world, and there is enough to go around.
That's a good analogy, isn't it? If we all gave a dollar, what the power of that could do, $1. And we do, we get hung up with money, don't we? We certainly do here in Australia, I suppose, in a lot of countries. And money obviously buys things and keeps us alive on our day to day. But I think what I've seen with COVID is that everyone's sort of drawing back now and I'm seeing on Facebook a lot of people building their own vegetable gardens and going back to their roots and making life more simpler and not relying on that mad rush of the world and the money that it sits around. So I love what you're saying there.
I think COVID is actually, just to jump in on there, it's a gift to humanity.
Mm.
You know, just before it all happened, I started working on another TED Talk where I wanted to illustrate the Ubuntu philosophy in a different perspective. So imagine if humanity was like the human body, that we are one organism. And if you cut your finger and you start to bleed, your white blood cells will rush to that point to heal it. In a week's time, you can't even see where the scar was. That's how we should be responding to each other in the world. And COVID-19 has come to demonstrate that, that we are a breath away from affecting and impacting each other. If one human being on this planet is not okay, we are all not okay. Mm. You know, New Zealand reacted really well to the pandemic. We locked down fast. We had gone back to normal a few months ago.
Yes.
And then a container comes in from the United States, infects somebody in Auckland. We had to go back into lockdown again a few weeks ago. So what's happening on the other side of the world is impacting us here in New Zealand, thousands of kilometers away. So COVID is a gift to humanity. It's helped us prioritize what's really important in life. The earth is breathing right now. Mm. Carbon emission has been cut down because we can't travel. You know, we are in the middle of the crisis, so we can't quite see the gifts.
Yes.
But I think if we look back 10 years from now, this will all make perfect sense in some way.
Well, we can look at the positives and the learnings from that. And then obviously the negatives are there. We can't ignore those, but there's always the positive and negative, isn't it? Those forces that if we make sure we look at both, then we can understand how do we move forward from that? How do we grow from that? How can we improve rather than the blame shame game? What's done is done.
It doesn't
work, but I still see it, you know, in government systems, and I see it in Victoria now happening with you know, the blame, the shame, and the hype and the drama, whereas we need to acknowledge that what's happened has happened. We can't go back and change it. We can move forward in a positive way where everyone is involved, and that's the underlying element. The dynamic element of all your business, by the sound of it to me, that
and they say in Chinese they write the word crisis with two symbols. One stands for danger, the other stands for opportunity. So there is an opportunity right now for all of us as human beings to create a different paradigm, a different world. We will never go back to the way it was. That is not going to happen. And for those who see the opportunities, there's so many people who are online. People who are listening to this interview right now have tuned in from right across the globe.
Yes.
We are more connected now than ever before in humanity's history. It's an exciting time. Sad, but exciting at the same time, because something new is being born.
I agree. I agree with you there. And I believe a lot of our listeners would too. We've all been touched by sadness in one way or form during the crisis. And no doubt it's not going to go away in a hurry. So we have to accept that there's going to be a new world order, so to speak, and that we have to all work towards that, that it's not the government's job. The government can only do what the government does. We all have to chip in. It's like that. Coming back to that $1, that if we all gave $1, what could we do? So tell me, Gertrude, what attracts people to your events?
I think it's different. This is an experience that you wouldn't get at any normal conference. So in another life, I'm a dancer. I'm an African dancer. So we infuse music and dance into everything we do. You know, when you're talking about women's stories that have sexual and domestic abuse, they're very, very heavy stories to consume. So when we curate our program, we make sure that we have a woman who's talking about business. The next woman might be talking about family and relationships, and it's a sad story. But we empower her to tell the story from a place of empowerment, what she learned, what she got out of that experience, and what she can teach somebody else who's going through the same thing. The next speaker will probably come in and get everybody to stand up and dance. So we shift the energy.
Yes.
So it's an experience like no other. And we're trying to do the same thing online. So as I am headhunting and shortlisting my speakers, we are looking for rich content to give you a virtual online experience like no other. It's going to be a lot of fun. We also run workshops so that you're not just coming in to sit and listen to a bunch of speakers all day. We have a forum at the end of every five speakers where the audience gets to participate and ask the speakers questions before we move on to the next group of speakers. So we have 15 speakers a day with 30-minute breaks in between. So it's going to be interesting. I'm really excited. You also get to go into breakout rooms in the beginning of the conference in the morning and during lunchtime. So you meet four other people you've never met. And we're hoping by the end of the conference, maybe you've met 100 people you didn't know before.
Yes.
So it's going to be exciting.
That sounds phenomenal. So you're running all this from New Zealand, or do you have bases that will run it in different countries?
New Zealand is the mothership at the moment.
Yeah.
I am actually looking for people who are looking for business opportunities to take on a location. I need 1,000 new locations. So if anybody out there is inspired to come on board and chair an event on our behalf, we're very open to looking at business partnerships in that respect so we can scale.
And what a wonderful opportunity. I know that we've spoken about myself being a chair, and I'm so excited about it because I love what you're doing there. We've lost our events, our face-to-face events, and everyone grieved that they couldn't move their business forward, that our business would become Zoom. But it's not, is it? Zoom is only the carrier. It's the creation behind it, and that's you, that creative force behind it, that you infuse that want and need with others, and they'll come along and join you.
Yeah, it's been funny because, you know, my daughter lives in Melbourne and we are closer now than we've ever been before. We have two things we do every week. We dress up in different types of costumes and we dance together online, you know.
Yeah.
She's 29, I'm 53, but I haven't been this close to my daughter. And I think it's because of that. You take someone for granted when you know you can just get on a flight and go and see them.
Yes.
So we have these dates and it's very, very real. It feels like she's here with me. So this online gift that we have called the internet has flattened the world. What I'm doing with her story could not be done before because there wasn't the internet. So the world is flat, and if everybody can just get that gift and realize the power of being online and having this video connection, you can totally transform your business and turn it into something else.
I love it. It's really exciting, and it ignites that passion in each person that listens to you. And I've watched that happen myself, and your message that we are all unique, as I mentioned earlier, we forget that, but we need to go back to that again. We need to step backwards in our businesses and look at what makes us tick, what is making it fun for us that will make it fun for everyone else. Instead of this, I've got to sell this, I've got to make money, and rather than that, how do we have the fun? Because we lost the fun, didn't we, for a long time there before COVID.
It's so true. And your wealth lies in your passion.
Mm.
You know, I was that little girl in school at the back of the room, chatting, talking, joking, being punished for speaking. And I turned it into a career. I can do this 24/7. And that's why Bill Gates is Bill Gates. It's not work for him. It's a passion, it's fun, and that's where your wealth lies.
And that's the key that's unlocked everything that I'm hearing today, is that that's the key. So what is your proudest business accomplishment?
Let me think. I would have to say it was launching my first business and failing in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I came to New Zealand as a systems analyst. I was in the IT field. I was struggling with three kids under the age of 12. When my husband came, he could not practice as a doctor here for a while. So the New Zealand Medical Council 20 years ago took a whole year to accredit his qualifications. So he came out to Australia. I was here. We thought it would take a few months. It took a year. So I was forced to go into business to find a way to look after my children. And I created a small little shop that sold my hand-painted textiles. I tried to sell my fabric. My fabric would not sell. I was painting zebras and giraffes and oranges and reds and bright colors. And most Kiwis think black is a color. We only wear black at funerals. So everything clashed, everything failed. But that failure led me to develop my first million-dollar idea, which was to create a recruiting agency for doctors. So I had a shop. I sat in this shop for a year. Nobody was buying my product. I was exporting mostly through my website to the United States. And I just started thinking of other business ideas. And when my husband was job hunting, I saw hundreds of vacancies online for doctors. And I just wrote an email to a few friends in South Africa. I said, would you like to come to New Zealand? They said yes. And in my first 3 months of business, I made $125,000 by pacing five doctors.
Wow.
And that changed everything for me. I went back to all of my IT skills, started creating databases and connecting people. That's what I do best. Mm-hmm. So the recruiting business, I was connecting doctors to practices that needed them. I went into film recruiting when they were filming King Kong and Avatar, sold the database to Peter Jackson's team, and supplied all the ethnic extras for King Kong and Avatar and took part in the movies. And now I'm doing the same thing with Her Story. It's all about connecting who's looking for those powerful, inspiring women in their organizations. We are going to be the one-stop shop for that. Really excited about that.
Wow, that's a huge trajectory, isn't it? So you came from painting your textiles and trying to sell them in New Zealand when you first arrived without your husband, looking after your children, and then what you call failure, and how that failure you turned into where you are now. So what do you call your business for this medical practice business?
It's Medical Recruiters of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So everything where I found myself failing, I see them as stepping stones to my success. So now when things go wrong, I don't let it get me down so much. I pay attention to why it's failed, because that's where the gift is. If you can figure out why you failed, you can figure out how to solve it. So there's been a lot of things that have gone wrong with Her Story when we launched. Every single time I see a stumbling block, I don't try and jump over it. I turn it over. I examine it. Then I see the gem. I see the gift. I find a better way to do it.
I like that. That's really good. That's interesting how you've done that. And I hate the word pivot because it's been bandied around so much, but you've done that very, very well. The flip. Pivot. There's got to be another better word than that. But it's you, isn't it? And that's how you've changed that uniqueness about you. So what's one fun fact about you that listeners might be interested in hearing?
Oh, I think my misspelled German name. So my name should be spelled Gertrude, Gertrude, but it's spelled Get Rude. Yes. And I was named after my grandmother, who was brought up in an orphanage in Africa. So when colonialists came to Africa, they would forcibly remove children from their parents and throw them in orphanages. My grandmother was stripped of her name. She didn't know her African name. Mm. And she says when she learned to read and write the English language, she dropped the R in Gertrude as an act of defiance. She decided to get rude, to piss off the nuns. And she says they would beat her until she was black and blue and she refused to change it back.
Good on her.
In Africa, we believe that when you name a child after you, you will never die. Your name is in your story, or your story is in your name. So most African names have a meaning. So my name has this unique meaning. I get to talk about my grandmother every single day. And the people who knew her, who made me, say I'm a duplicate copy of her. She was feisty. She was creative. She was a potter. She was an entrepreneur in her little village. And I think that's one fun fact about me.
That's a fun fact. So you have a very close connection with her. And that's very interesting to share those stories of your life, you know, when you had that and how she had a huge effect on where you went with your life and how you've continued that and you've held that close with you. That's another thing. I think our listeners could be picking up so much from you. You're a fountain of knowledge across a range of areas, but it's not too fussy. It's not too fussy at all. It all fits in really well. I have a lot of people say to me, you do too much. You should stop doing all that stuff you do. No. And I don't even listen to it. I don't hear it because it's me. It's what I do. And I like the creation. Creation is what I'm about. So
I read a book. I can't remember the author's name, but it was Refuse to Choose. It was a woman who was going into business, who was told, oh, have the babies, way to go into business. And she said, I refuse to choose. I wanted to be the mother. I wanted to be the entrepreneur. I wanted to be creative. So I have a brain that fires from creative to structure. And so I use all of those capacities. None of my businesses are related. Everything I've done is so different. But I refuse to pick one thing. And I think I probably was ADD when I was a kid. I just wasn't medicated. So I tap into that creativity. You're right. For me, the challenge is in creating something new every time. And then when that's done, I'm like, okay, what's the next challenge?
Yes.
And that's the choice that you get to make.
It's lifelong learning, isn't it? Your refusal to just stay in one spot. It's your need and want as a unique person to keep growing and flourishing and sharing. That really rings well with me because that's the sort of person I am. I do a range of different things and you can see people's face straight away. They go, and now I just sort of rattle them all off in a row, just sort of get that out of the way. So now you know who I am a little bit. All right then. So if you were to have a conversation with your younger self, what three nuggets, golden nuggets of wisdom, Gertrude, would you give to your younger self?
I would say trust yourself. You were born with a knowing for everything that your heart desires. I think a lot of times we doubt ourselves when we come up with ideas and we think, oh, can I do this? I don't have the money. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have. And we go into the I don't have. I have learned to trust myself. So that's what's got me to this point. So that would be the first thing. Second thing is what you think of me is your business. Don't care what people have got to say or think about you. What's important is what you think about yourself. A lot of times we live to please other people, whether it's our spouses, whether it's the family, whether it's the community and friends. It actually doesn't matter because they get on with their own lives. And the third thing I would say is make sure that you have made a difference. Make sure that you have made a difference in other people's lives.
We only get one life, don't we? So we have to make the most of it this time around. And the people pleaser thing struck me, really struck me, and probably struck me a couple of years ago. It's actually in my book that I had that aha moment. We all have a aha moment at some time in our life where we recognize that this is not enough. Is this all there is to life? And I hit my aha moment in the shower one day, and it really was a bang. And I'd spent a lifetime pleasing everyone. You please your parents, you please your boss, you please your friends, you please your husband, you please your children, you're pleasing. And it's just, and then all of a sudden you become a watered down
version of you.
Yeah. And you really don't know who you are in the end. You don't remember the fun times when you were young and all your dreams and what you wanted to achieve that all got pushed back.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
You only have one life. Live it to the full and don't be afraid.
Because what's the worst thing can go wrong? You'll fail. And what is failure?
A stepping stone to your success. Yes.
Absolutely. A stepping stone to success. So tell us, Gertrude, if you wouldn't mind, and I know our listeners would be very interested in hearing you today and will want more. So luckily the podcasts are available there on Spotify and other podcast channels. But can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
I'm mostly on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me through my website, theherstorycircle.com. Do register to speak at one of our events. We're busy recruiting for November, December, and the first quarter of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And my email is Gertrude@herstorycircle.com. And remember to misspell the Gertrude. Gertrude.
So again, your email is Gertrude, at
herstorycircle.com.
So there you go, listeners. There's a power pack that we're listening to today, a dynamic woman who comes all the way from Africa and brings with her a wealth of knowledge, history, archaeology, philanthropy, and brings that into the new world, travels across the continent and spreads the word. So if you're listening and you're interested in becoming a speaker, I highly recommend that you go to Gertrude's website, herstory.com.
Herstorycircle.com.
Yes, thank you. And I'll pop her a line at her email, Gertrude@herstorycircle.com.
Yes.
Now, so that's where people, if they want to speak at your summit, and that's women only, is it, for the summit?
No, we actually allow 25% men.
Yes.
I believe that until we start bringing men to the table at women's events, the condition of women will not change.
I agree.
So we're looking for inspiring, enlightened men who would like to be part of our circle.
I love it. So what sort of categories have you got again? I know you mentioned them earlier.
Okay, so we have business and entrepreneurship, health and wellness, creativity, social justice, spirituality, and family and relationships. And we are happy to expand those categories. If you come in with something different, we are very open to hear, because sometimes we get different talking points for different locations. So we have to accommodate that.
That's great. And how many locations are you going to cover with this summit?
This particular summit, we have New Zealand, Australia, US, UK, and Europe.
And here we go.
Vietnam. We just had a lady in Vietnam step up yesterday.
Lovely.
Who said she's willing to host and be a chairperson for Vietnam.
Whoa, that's great. And that's good for Vietnam too, isn't it? Because it's about that inclusion, isn't it? Getting everyone involved, spread the word. Now, before we go, we've got some time. Can you tell our listeners all about your books, please?
Okay, so I have a book called Born on the Continent Ubuntu. That is my very first book. It's a memoir based on my life story, and I managed to wrap the philosophy into my story and express how I am a sum total of every single human being that I've ever met. The second book is called It's Not About What Happens That Matters, and it's a practical guide to overcoming life's challenges. I pulled out the major things that had happened to me up until that point. But with every challenge, there was a gift. I learned something and I developed. This year, I'm launching three books before the end of the year. The one book is How to Speak from the Heart and Land Your First TED Talk. So I'm a three-time TED speaker. Once you get on TED, you're speaking to the world. You could be invited to a small event, but once your website is online, you start getting invitations from all over the world. And that's what happened to my speaking career. And that's what I coach and that's what I teach. The other book is called The First Man That I Ever Loved. And this book is dedicated to my father. So my dad died of a sudden heart attack in 2018. And less than 18 months later, my mother died. And I'm not ready to write my mother's book yet, but I was almost finished with my dad's. And the last book is called Dear Harry. And that's about romance. So I wrote a series of letters to my next husband when I left the first. And I was determined that I would find my next partner fast, quick, and easy. It started as love letters to a random stranger when I felt lonely or sad. And people just encouraged me to keep writing. And I wrote 60 letters to a man I didn't know. And when he showed up, I knew it was him. We connected so quick and so fast. A year later, we got married. And I'm happily married to Dariusz Kanitsky.
Yes.
And I believe in love. I believe women shouldn't give up on finding a significant other, regardless of what's happened in the first relationship. It doesn't have to happen in the second. So those are the books that I am coming up with for the end of this year.
I can see Dear Harry being a movie. So tell me a bit more about that love story. Tell us a little bit more about how that happened.
You know, in the very first letter, I knew that my next significant other would be so different, I wouldn't recognize him. Mm. It was because I wasn't looking for the outside of a person, what they would look like. I described the essence of this man. And I wrote a line in the first letter that said, with the first hug, I felt the broken pieces of my life come back together again as you heal me with love and laughter. And that's what happened on my first date. I was recovering from heart failure. And I met him because one of my friends put my profile on a dating website. I had chronic fatigue. I couldn't walk. I couldn't get out of bed. And she said, Gertrude, I've put your profile on this dating website. You have to wake up. You have to walk. Just go on dates with these guys. Have a coffee. Have some tea. Put on a pretty dress and some makeup. And I agreed to go on that first date, and he's the only person I dated. And I just knew it was him, and life has been absolutely blissful since.
Wow.
Absolutely magical. I believe in love. I think love holds this universe together.
It does, doesn't it? It gives us great joy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And without it, we're bereft of everything, aren't we? We're shallow, we're hollow. And it's almost like without love, we're in a state of grieving. There's something that's natural for us, isn't it? Because we're connected people.
And it happens. I mean, I was married for 27 years and I met my first husband when I was 17. I thought I would die with him.
Mm.
He was supposed to be my soulmate, you know, and it didn't quite work out like that. And I love being married. I loved having my family around me. And when I lost that, I felt like I lost myself. My whole sense of self-worth was gone. But I had seen a lot of friends go through something similar. And I'd always told myself if I found myself in that position, I was going to rebound quick and fast and live my life to the full. And so I've managed to do that. And I am so happy being where I am right now.
And is he able to travel with you when you travel around the world?
Yes, he's an IT consultant, so he can work anywhere in the world. He just has to have his laptop. So we've done quite a bit of travel already. We've just been together 3 years, but it's been great. Absolutely.
What a lovely story. It really is a lovely story. And I've taken so much from today and prior to every time I speak to you, I walk away and it's like a bubble has burst and I feel really, really good. You know, like there's lots of light around, there's lots of hope, there's lots of possibility because there is. And we need somebody to remind us that this is what is out there. We just need to go and get it. Otherwise, we get all bogged down. And a lot of people in our everyday, partnerships or connections aren't necessarily the people that will boost us up. They're the people that could be talking about negative things and focusing on things that make us feel deflated and make us feel like we're not good enough.
And we have to work with these relationships.
That's right. We do, don't we?
Yeah.
But we also have to know when it's time to walk away from those relationships. And that's what you're saying. It's not a bad thing.
No, I read a quote that said, when love is no longer being served at your dinner table, that's the time to walk away.
Wow.
And I came to that point, and I did walk away because I just wanted to have a different life experience before I died. So love does exist. You just have
the dinner table. The dinner table is absolutely critical in a relationship, isn't it? Around food. And I, you say in our home, we're not going to ever fall in the trap of sitting in front of TV and eating, ever. We sit at the dinner table and we talk with each other and we hear what's going on and we ask questions and we laugh, we cry, we get angry. Whatever we do, the dinner table is a great place to do that.
Yeah,
I love it.
We have a quote that says, "Wukama igata, runosungwane chikafu," which means relationships are like fabric bound together by the breaking of bread.
I really enjoy listening to you. No, you'll have to come back again. And I know there'll be a lot of people that will be interested in talking to you and finding out more and learning more about you. So your website, herstorycircle.com, is the first place that you need to go, everyone. So there's not much time left. And I'd like to thank you, Gertrude, for giving me the time and coming today and sharing all your knowledge and your thoughts. It's been wonderful. For our listeners out there, thanks for coming on board. We have had another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points here, and it has been fabulous. Thank you very much, Gertrude. And if you tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time AEST and 5 p.m. PT time in America, and don't forget, on the 1st of November, times change, contact me via my website, www.tracytully.com, no E's. And if you've missed Gertrude's connections there, you'll always be able to find me, and I'll be able to pass you on. If you're interested in being part of this summit, whether you're male or female, and I can imagine the age would be of no difference, and you want to be part of this fabulous summit in November, then you need to do something about it and make it happen. So thank you so much, and we say farewell to everyone.
Thank you so much for the interview, Tracy.
My pleasure, Gertrude, and we look forward to seeing you again another time. Yeah.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence, and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.